When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This is Kevin Conroy, the voice of Batman. And you're listening to the DCAU Review, hosted by Cal and Liam, streaming at DCAUReview.com and on your favorite podcast app.
Gotham City is out of control.
An entire city screaming in fear.
Supervillains walk the streets, preying on the innocent.
They will learn the true nature of power.
The police are powerless. A creature prowls this urban wasteland.
Who's that?
He moves in darkness. For some, he is a rumor. A name whispered in the corridors of the underworld. Waiting for the chance to strike. Let every criminal know the acid taste of fear.
You crazy!
A bat! Giant bat!
Gotham has forgotten what justice means. The Dark Knight is here to remind them.
Who are you?
Batman. Good guys wear black.
Hey everybody, welcome to episode 153 of the DCAU Review. I am one of your hosts, Cal, and with me, my good friend, good brother, the gentleman that runs our Twitter page. That's right, it's our other host, Liam. Liam, welcome to episode 153 of the DCAU Review.
Right, we are continuing with our reviews of Batman the Animated Series all month long, and this one is something of a rarity in that we are watching an episode or reviewing an episode this week that is a direct sequel to a previous episode. There isn't a lot of direct continuity in a lot of these episodes other than the literal two-parters or the an occasional reference here and there. Obviously we have recurring characters, but this is definitely a direct sequel to our previous villain's appearance in Feet of Clay. But this week we are talking about the sequel episode, Mudslide.
That's right. And as you said, we did cover Feet of Clay already in the archives at DCAUReview.com. You can head back on your favorite podcast app or at DCAUReview.com to check out the archives and listen to our review of that episode. If I recall, Liam, that episode sits in our top pick section. It was a fairly high score. Was that a perfect episode?
From myself, I believe, yes. I think it was top pick for both of us, but a perfect 40 for me.
That's right. We which is interesting because we know that the first part of that episode, the visual and animation, maybe not definitely not from our favorite animation studio, but made up for it more than enough in the second part, and some great directing from friend of the show Kevin Altieri, who directed part two, I believe, of Feet of Clay. So some great stuff there, some great stuff to talk about. But today, as you mentioned, we are discussing Mudslide. So before we get into breaking down our four categories for this episode and the official IMDb synopsis, which you will provide to us, I will let the listeners know that this episode originally aired on September the 15th, 1993, which means we are coming up here in just a few short months. It will be the 28-year anniversary of this show. And interestingly, Liam, this episode actually aired a little over a year and a couple days after Feet of Clay Part 1 had originally aired. So this was the sequel. They had to wait a little while. We had to wait a little while before there was a follow-up to the Clayface episode. So hit us with that official IMDb synopsis, if you will.
Of course, and this is for the episode Mudslide, which was written by Alan Burnett and Steve Perry, directed by Eric Radomski, with music by Shirley Walker and animation by Studio Junio or Junio. I'm not 100% on how to pronounce that, but it's a rare studio. We don't talk about them much, but that synopsis reads as such. Clayface resurfaces with his body's cellular integrity decaying.
That's it?
That's it.
Okay. All right. It that is indeed the truth. I suppose we can talk about that as we go forth here. But as you mentioned, Liam, in our sort of lead up to the official IMDb synopsis, which gets I would get that as a grade. It gets an incomplete. Like if I gave that a final grade, it would be like you get an I. It's incomplete. There's not enough information there for me to grade it properly. So, but as you mentioned, this is a follow up. When we last left Matt Hagen / Clayface, he was believed to have been deceased by the police as he. The final scene of that episode would lead you to believe that he was electrocuted and taken away, and then they realize that the corpse that they have in the morgue sort of disintegrates, and there's this parting shot of Matt or somebody walking away from the hospital that whose eyes change color and begin to laugh with the same voice as Clayface. So we know that Clayface will once again return, but this time Clayface reappears. He's breaking into a wealth advisor's office, I believe is our financial advisor's office. And we quickly learn that something is not quite the same or right with old Matt Hagen.
Yeah, it's an interesting opener there. So we just got this sort of cold open of the security guards talking. And then a guy who happens to look a lot like one of the security guards goes up to the owner or CEO of this company's office to help himself to the contents of his safe. The second security guard comes up to interfere there, and he's sort of attacked by what turns out to be Clayface there. Batman's kind of on the scene pretty quickly there, and Clayface actually gets the drop on Batman and seemingly has him dead to rights, but then the clock dramatically strikes 12, and Clayface seems to begin to kind of fall apart, and he has sort of a low speed chase with Batman from there through the streets of Gotham.
You used to be faster, Hagen, not to mention neater.
Finally able to escape thanks to a mysterious woman who shows up and drives away with him just in the nick of time, just as Batman sort of has him cornered. So it's an interesting open to the episode, because obviously we immediately establish there's no real mystery about who the villain is this week. But it's also, you establish not only is he back, but obviously something is different, something is wrong with him. And that sort of is our driving force of the episode, is Clayface and this doctor accomplice of his trying to find ways to keep him from degenerating as his condition is worse. And not only can he not sort of shape change at will anymore, he can't even sort of hold form at all, even as that sort of giant, mud monster that he is. That he is in his quote unquote true form now, even that, like holding solid form at all is becoming impossible for him.
Yeah. So there's a cut scene back where you're introduced to this, this doctor that is sort of abating him and helping him to survive. And they have this containment suit that she's been putting him in to sort of literally hold him together and try and try and hold him together by feeding him with these unnamed chemicals initially, sort of pumping him through with it. And it's very quick. They give you a quick insight that she clearly has feelings that go deeper than just trying to help Matt Hagen out. She has some romantic interest, and we will come to learn later on in the episode that she was actually a consultant on one of Matt Hagen's films, and that's how their contact originated. And Batman is able to deduce that through some detective work and through some help from his trusty butler Alfred. But you know, we get to see that she has romantic feelings for him, and he is still very much not feeling this whole monster gimmick. He enjoys the power, but at the same time, it seems like he's very much over it. And it's interesting because Batman reiterates at the beginning, right as they're experiencing that low chase scene, that or low speed chase scene, that that he has, the offer still stands for him to help Hagen. Use Batman to use his resources to help Hagen to become human again. And Hagen very stubbornly announces that he does not need Batman's help. And this sort of leads to him trying to do this on his own. The doctor sort of through some exposition says that she believes, and through some visual experiments have discovered that there's this one element that she believes can help solidify Matt Hagen and kind of reverse this degenerative process, not only reverse it to the point where he can begin to hold himself together, but that he might be able to be Matt Hagen wholly once again.
Stella, I'm sorry. I know I owe everything to you. You cured more than my body. You cured my heart.
I have something to show you, Matthew. Something new. Watch.
How did you do that?
A new isotope. MP40, an experimental mutagenic adaptogen. I believe it can restore, maybe even increase your powers, perhaps permanently. You can become Matt Hagen again, forever.
Where can we get this stuff?
Well, that's a problem. The only large source is Wayne Biomedical Labs. It's rare, and it will be well protected.
Protected from human thieves, maybe, but not from Clayface.
No, Matthew, it's too risky. Without the suit, your structural integrity could go at any time.
It's worth the risk. I'm not spending the rest of my life like this.
But of course, wouldn't you know it, they would have to go and break into a Bruce Wayne owned company in order to obtain this chemical. So the irony being that Batman has offered to help him, he's rejected it, but then he goes to steal this chemical unbeknownst to him from Batman himself.
Yeah, that's and that sort of leads to our second action beat of the episode, as Batman kind of corners him and he, Clayface, disguises himself as one of the scientists and sort of almost gets away. He ends up on a subway, but can't maintain the form to blend in for any longer. And Batman is able to confront him on the subway and even kind of has him dead to rights there, using some liquid nitrogen, something that kind of freezes him. But then Clayface is kind of just dives out a window in an act of desperation and then lands in sort of a passing dump truck and is able to escape that way, with the isotope. It is from a plot standpoint, pretty basic. It's just, you know, we get a little bit, like you said, of Clayface. We establish what his relationship with this doctor is from Batman, and that sort of sets up our final confrontation. Batman has another brief talk with Alfred as they're sort of puzzling over what the connection is and where they could be hiding. And Alfred makes a passing mention that the only relationship with the doctor that Clayface ever had was on screen when in a movie that Matt Hagen had starred in. As you mentioned, we find out that the doctor was in fact a consultant on the film.
There's nothing here about any women doctors, Master Bruce. The ladies Mr. Hagen knew were generally of a less, intellectual class.
We're missing something.
I can't imagine what. Closest thing Hagen had to a relationship with a doctor was in the film Dark Interlude. In it, he plays Eric Chandler, a senator who falls in love with a plastic surgeon treating him.
That's it. His movies.
Master Bruce?
No time to explain now, Alfred.
There never is.
And in fact, also, and we'll get, I guess we could talk about this here because it involves the character's name. There's a lot of in jokes to like old, not even that old, or there are a lot of classic films.
Yep.
One being that the doctor's name is Stella Bates. Stella being the name of a woman in the Marlon Brando film, Streetcar Named Desire. And then we also have her last name is Bates, which is the name of the main character from Psycho. And they do in fact mention that Mrs. Bates used to own a motel that she sold, that she then sold in order to, I guess, get the money to set up this, this lab to help Clayface. So there's a lot of cute little Hollywood Easter eggs sprinkled throughout this episode. Yeah. Then we sort of get to this ending where, Batman sort of cuts off the treatment and I guess wants to help him, but wants to do it, you know, within the confines of the law. And Clayface just decides it's got to end here and sort of forces Batman's hand. And they have this confrontation. They spill out into the sort of these cliffs where this lab is on just a cliff on the outskirts of town. And of course it's raining and Clayface begins to absorb all of the water from the rain. It begins to fall apart even faster. And in fact, his refusal to sort of stop seeking revenge is his ultimate downfall, quite literally, as he tumbles to his apparent death in the river below.
Yeah, it's another tragic ending or appearance of an ending for one Matt Hagen, not quite the same impact and power that we saw in that final scene in Feet of Clay Part 2, but still a tragedy nonetheless. And the rain adds certainly, we'll talk about visuals in just a moment here, but Batman is left sort of to console Dr. Bates. And as she weeps for what appears to be the loss of her love, we, of course, have the benefit of foresight, knowing that this is not the final appearance for one Matt Hagen's Clayface. In fact, we get a pretty interesting follow-up to this episode in the new Batman Adventures, which ends up being one of your favorite episodes of the new Batman Adventures, which we will, of course, tackle once we get across that bridge. I guess we can start getting into our plot scores for this week. It is an interesting turn here. There is a lot of tragic elements that come to it. Interesting motivations, I think, on both sides of the character. They don't really give you an explanation as to why Matt Hagen, other than just being a stubborn person, I wish there was a little bit more motivation for him to not accept Batman's help, but to go kind of out of his own way and want to do this on his own. I kind of question Batman's decision to turn off the machine just as he's about to transform back into Matt Hagen. I mean, yes, it was done using stolen property, but he's seconds away from transforming back into Matt Hagen. And I know that there was maybe some subtle or not so subtle inferences when Dr. Bates is explaining to Matt Hagen that what this isotope can do, that it would make him more powerful. And I feel like even if it was just a throwaway line that maybe he was more interested in maintaining this Clayface persona as opposed to the idea that he could reform and turn back into Matt Hagen permanently. I feel like maybe if there was a little bit more inference there that he was more interested in using this isotope to be able to continue as a villainous, you know, shapeshifter as opposed to regaining his human form, that would have kind of made it sense and justified Batman's decision to turn this off. You know, he doesn't know, is he actually going to use it to turn back into Matt Hagen, or is he just going to regain and become more powerful like he was? But there isn't that there. So it really comes off as Batman just kind of being a jerk and shutting down this machine for the sake of the fact that it's, you know, he's using stolen chemicals, which is no different than what Ferris Boyle does to Victor Freeze in Heart of Ice. Like he turns off the machines that could have kept Nora Freeze alive in that episode. Did he have the right to? Sure, but he's still kind of a jerk in that episode. So doesn't this in turn make Batman kind of a jerk?
I'd say so. And yeah, I think so. Yeah, there's the one scene earlier, like you said, they mentioned where he mentions that it could make him more powerful or whatever. And there's also the scene earlier where the Doctor is watching the movie, and he destroys the TV and says, that's not who I am anymore, you know, and then sort of repeats, you know, upsets the Doctor. And he sort of somewhat coldly, you know, embraces her and repeats the line from the movie, which to me, I sort of took as this is an act for him. Like he's using her and using sort of her infatuation with him. But that's not expressly said, and if there was, as I agree that there needed to be at least one line in that final act about how, you know, he was really using her at first just to stay alive, and then once he found out about this isotope, he wanted to use her to gain more power, not to become Matt Hagen again, but to increase his power as Clayface. I think that would have been a more interesting turn. Because yeah, as it stands, he seems to be transforming back into a human, and then Batman shuts the machine off and doesn't really give a good reason for why he's got to stop Hagen here. Or even if it was just like dialogue between Batman and Alfred, where they kind of realize what he took, and Batman realizes what it could mean if Clayface ingests a lot of this new power source or whatever. But yeah, so I do think it kind of falls flat. Like I said, I kind of inferred a little bit of maybe that he was using the Doctor. Also, not the least of which, because in a previous episode, he had a male companion that I'm not sure Matt Hagen swings that way, like, is what I... You know, from a romantic standpoint.
That's a good point.
I think, you know, it's not always a binary switch for people. So perhaps he is, I don't want to assume anyone, I don't want to assume this fictional mud monster's sexuality, but that did strike me as him kind of like just saying what he thought he needed to say to get her to keep helping him in that moment. But I agree with you for the most part that because it's not explicitly stated, that does hurt the final act there a little bit. It is still sad and tragic as he, you know, tumbles over the side and everything, but it's also a little bit like, well, that's the end. And it seems like that, and they don't wink at the camera this time. It does appear that maybe at least at the time that this was meant to be a true end for that character. So like I said, I like this episode, but there's definitely some holes in it, and I think that why I ended up with a score of 6 out of 10.
Very interesting that you gave it 6 out of 10, because I also gave it 6 out of 10. And we haven't reminded the listeners in quite a while, but we don't discuss our scores. We originally used to do that back in our early days, but at some point we made the switch where we don't really discuss our scores before we go on the air. So these come about independently, despite the fact we end up typically with similar scores as we did today. I think the same reason. It's not a bad episode. It's enjoyable. 22 minutes. It's very It didn't feel like it dragged at any point. The pace was set very well. I didn't think that this was one that could have used an expansion of the story in a second part. I think they contained and told a story well within those 22 minutes, but I think those plot holes, you know, of kind of making Batman out to be a little bit of a jerk. And I do like maybe the subtlety of him using the doctor, but because it's not explicitly said, it's, you know, it's difficult to say that he did or was not doing that specifically. So because we have to kind of draw our own conclusions there, you know, I think that's why we ended up both giving it a little bit of a lower score than we otherwise would have.
Yeah, definitely agree with that. Definitely some things to like, but you know, not a home run, as it were.
Indeed. Let's move on to our next category, Liam, which will be visual and animation. This is a large category to talk about. Of course, we have a very interesting physical looking character here with different traits and shape shifting, and I feel like the animators had a lot of fun, as they did in prior episodes with this. Looking up, kind of talking about the animation studio itself, you mentioned the studio Junio or Junio, whatever it is not one that was used too many times. It was previously used in The Underdwellers.
Dollar in the Jar.
Dollar in the Bat episode, Jar. It was also used in Dreams and Darkness that we've covered both in the archives at DCAUreview.com. And then there's several others that we'll cover in the future that they did. But they only did, it looks like, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, according to the DCAU wiki, only 7 episodes that this animation studio ended up doing. So interesting. I felt like most of the characters look to be pretty much on model. This leans a little bit more towards that pointier nose, droopier cowl, longer eared Batman, more than the square jaw Batman. But there was, I felt like almost a hybrid between the two styles here, that I felt like at points it kind of did shift a little bit more to that square jawed Batman.
Yeah, I mean, I thought it was pretty consistent. Which again, we've talked about that a lot. That's generally what all we want. You know, different animation studios, different directors, different storyboard artists. It's not always going to look exactly the same as you know, different artists drawing the same character in different comic books. It happens. But yeah, I thought that Batman's has a pretty consistent look throughout all of it. Yeah, it is interesting because it's not the real long droopy nose and the super elongated and kind of angular chin, but it is some sort of as you said, a hybrid between that and the sort of you know, very, you know, straight up on model super square jawed design. So yeah, I think it's fine. I think for the most part, I think is because of the content of the episode. We don't get a lot of the miraculous and incredible transformations from Clayface in this episode that we got in the first one. It feels a little more horror based, his melting, the scene where he is disguised as the scientist on the subway and his face slowly begins to melt and he sort of headbutts the window and his head kind of explodes into mud and everyone sort of runs away as you see the mud and clay sort of start to cover this woman's body as she sort of slowly melts back into Clayface. It definitely feels like there was more of a horror influence on this episode than the previous one, which maybe had more of an Eastern anime feel to it.
Look at that lady, Mommy. She's got mud all over her.
Run for your measly lives.
Run from Clayface! Dead meat, Batman. No room to dodge. I got you cold.
Other way around, Hagen.
Yeah, I agree with you. There was a lot of horror elements. That scene in particular really stood out as a very terrifying bit. Batman swings in, and after Clayface has scared off the passengers into the adjoining car, Batman steps up and kicks him, and he goes and he lands. He kicks Clayface in the back, so Clayface slides headfirst into this door, and then all of a sudden his head shifts from where it was on one end to the opposite end where his feet are in one transformation. I thought that was really great. I think the things that are going to stand out in this episode certainly are the moments involving Clayface. There were a couple cute nods. I saw a few places online where they mentioned that the containment suit that he was put in sort of looked like an Oscar statue, made him sort of resemble the Oscar or the Academy Award statue. I thought that was cute. Also keeping with that Hagen film theme. I thought that the scene actually, there's a scene early on in the episode where Alfred and Batman are in the Batcave. And Batman's doing this research and trying to figure out what's going on with Matt Hagen. And he's sitting there really close. It's a smaller version of the Bat computer than we're usually used to. And he's sitting in front of it, and there's this front lighting hitting him right in the face. It's a very different kind of look than we're used to. We don't usually get that front lighting on Batman. So his whole cowl is blue, and you really get the backlighting or the front lighting from the computer as he's sort of talking to Alfred there and typing. He's using his hands to gesture. I thought that scene was animated really, really well, and stood out for me. I thought also that the final scene and different Clayface transformations. He uses his hands to create sort of a scythe or a giant hook at one point. Another point he uses a mace, a ball and chain mace attachment. At the end, as we mentioned, as he's fighting in the rain, he's absorbing the rain. He really starts to melt, that melting process that happens in that scene and that opening scene where Batman's chasing him, and all of that, very, very powerful. But I think we would be remiss, Liam, not to mention the most horrifying scene. I think it goes right up there with the scene in Batman Beyond where Ink jams herself down Terry's throat. And that is the scene where Matt Hagen decides that he is going to drown Batman in himself.
Yes. It's a pretty disturbing little scene. Clayface decides this is the only way, and so he literally grabs Batman, stuffs him inside his chest, and begins to suffocate him. And even within that, I think there's another fun little, I think it's an Alien reference, where we see, still completely encased in clay, we just see like the outline of Batman's cowl bursting out of Clayface's chest, and then Clayface shoves it back in. While this is happening, you know, it's a glass window behind them. You see the lightning striking behind them. It's a very dramatic visual for that. And then, yes, Batman sort of slowly claws his way open and gets one breath of air before Clayface shoves him back down. And then finally, the way Batman is able to get out of it is, to shoot the grappling hook up out of Clayface's head and pull himself out. But it's pretty dramatic, especially with, when you see that you see Batman sort of flailing and thrashing and see the hands sort of sticking out and then going back in. It is very, very horror movie based.
Time for your final bow, Batman.
Matthew, no! You can't!
The only way!
Please, stop it!
Think, Stella! Do you want Matt Hagen or this?
No.
No, you don't!
Is he?
Almost. I can feel his heart slowing. Slowing.
Yeah, I'm pretty shocked. I guess I don't know how they got this past standards and practices that this was something that they could show Batman being suffocated and then him shooting a grappling gun out of the back of Clayface's head. You literally see the explosion come out of the back of his head and him scream in pain as this, you know, as the grappling hook shoots out from the back of his head. Really, really a great visual, great scene. As you mentioned, the lightning strike as Batman's head is coming out is, I think, it is pretty much the highlight of that scene. Done, animated really, really well. I would love to see some of the original storyboards from that. Just see what the original drawings were and what they had in mind compared to what actually ended up coming out, because it's really, really intense. But that scene really, really strong. I had also mentioned the transformation on the subway, especially when he smashes his head up against the glass and, the passengers around him start to freak out. But really, I think that the tragic ending of this episode is really highlighted and really emphasized as they go over the cliff. Batman and Clayface are fighting and they go over the cliff together, and Batman is hanging on and Clayface sort of has a tentacle, if you will, attached to Batman, and he's slowly slipping, and Batman tells him he's got to pull himself together, and he delivers kind of this last line and plummets into the water as he can't maintain his solidity, and he falls down into the water, and they kind of, the camera pans down into the water and you see the body hit. And then the next they cut to sort of the surface of the water and you see just the shape of, the outline of a human man there. And then it very quickly dissipates and goes away. And it's, it really, really plays into that final tragic ending of this character, or what you believe to be the ending of this character, is he literally can no longer hold himself together, and that man is just, he's gone, he's disintegrated, there is nothing left anymore of this man.
Yeah, I think that's it's a very very tragic ending, and we'll certainly get into that in voice acting, even in music, a little bit later. But yeah, I think the visuals do a good job of sort of illustrating that all throughout the episode. Even as we mentioned in that first sort of chase scene right at the beginning with him and Batman, as he turns his hand into the massive mallet and smashes a car, and then you just see this giant puddle of clay that he's leaving behind. Like everything he's doing, he's leaving like these giant puddles of residue. He ends up like leaning up against a dumpster and kind of barely even stand at that point. And yeah, they do some very cool things. A few other minor things I will mention. I didn't really have a good place to put this, so I guess I'll put it here. This episode and the movie that Matt Hagen is in is referenced in the Batman Arkham Knight video game. There's a poster for it in I believe it's in Batgirl's office at one point, or Oracle's office at one point. And then and the other note I had is that when Alfred is looking over magazine covers to try to figure out who the woman is, Matt Hagen apparently was photographed with Marilyn Monroe at some point.
That's pretty funny. I like that. Yeah, there was the stacks and stacks of the magazines really kind of drove home the fact that this guy, and I don't know if they mentioned that he was a movie star in that first episode, but I don't know that I quite got from that episode just how big of a movie star that he was supposed to have been, and the stacks and stacks of of Hollywood mags that Alfred is looking through as he's trying to make this connection to figure out who this doctor could be helping him, is there's just stacks of them, really drives that point home that he was, it was essentially, you know, one of the Hollywood elite that has had this tragic downturn into this, you know, villainous tragedy.
Yeah, absolutely. That is an interesting wrinkle that, yeah, they definitely didn't really explain in that first episode. But yeah, so I think visuals very strong in this episode. Like we said, not the same type of visuals that we got in the first Clayface episode, but I think it worked for the story they were telling because it was meant to be more of a body horror story. So I ended up giving visuals a very strong 9 out of 10.
Nice. I felt like between the scene on the subway and the scene with Batman being smothered inside of him and just the visuals that accompanied that, along with that, even that very first, that lumbering slow chase scene, as you mentioned, just really being able to communicate the exhaustion and the, you know, it's almost like, you know, he's out of shape. He's just, you know, pun intended, he can't hold himself together. And he comes to the end after Batman's chasing him. He just collapses on that dumpster and is just so exhausted. Like I felt that through the visuals. So I felt like I had no choice but to give this a perfect 10 out of 10.
Oh, very nice.
Yeah. All right, Liam. Well, let's move on to our next category, which is going to be music, which, again, as we mentioned last week, the entirety of the Batman soundtrack has been released for listening capabilities. But this one is not one of those ones where I felt like you would need to listen to these tracks in isolation just because of how powerful and how strong they use the recurring themes, both of them. There's sort of this very tragic underlying sad, I think it's a flute sounding track that plays when they want to, you know, emote that feeling of tragedy. But then when it's Clayface and he's sort of, you know, lumbering or about to wreak havoc, there's this heavier horn based deeper sounding theme, menacing theme, if you will, that plays. And they marry them, Shirley Walker married them so well together in the composition of them. And the music really, really comes through in this episode and calls back to that first episode of Feet of Clay.
Yeah, what struck me is that in the first, in Feet of Clay, that Clayface theme is played very somber sort of strings. It's played very tragically, and it's still played that way to an extent in this episode. But there's a more sort of dramatic, I don't know if sinister is the right term, but there's a lot more horns this time, I felt, and it strikes a little bit of a different note of, especially I think during some of the action scenes there, it's still the same theme. It's still the same notes. You can still tell what it is, but it's definitely has a different note. No pun intended this time. It definitely has a different. It's a different style of the same theme, and that's one thing that of course Shirley Walker was so good at with with the Batman theme itself and with a lot of these different villain themes was taking the same piece of music and, you know, changing the key or changing the instrument you play it on, and it gives it a completely different type of meaning and gives the episode an entirely different feel.
Yeah, I agree with you. There's even points where they play that more tragic, maybe the Matt Hagen or the, you know, the, I don't know what other word to use other than the tragic side of the Clayface theme. And she plays it in sort of off key notes and sort of minor keys, as opposed to the standard tuning of the typical notes. And it sort of just adds to this whole theme that he's falling apart. And this isn't the same Matt Hagen that, you know, we even saw at post Clayface transformation in Feet of Clay, that this really is the monster that's coming unwound and is barely holding himself together. And, you know, it's sort of succumbing to this this tragic, diseased end that he's about to face. So I thought she did that really well. I think that the scene also that we talked about in visuals that was so strong with the smothering or the drowning of Batman inside of Clayface is played really well too, because the music sort of slows down to this very menacing crawl as Batman, as you hear Ron Perlman come through and talk about, you know, his heart is slowing down and, you know, he's feeling it. And then he laughs. He has this evil, maniacal laugh that we'll talk about in our voice acting in just a second. But he has this evil laugh that comes through, and then the grappling gun shoots out of the back of Clayface's head, and the Batman theme plays, and Batman flies out of the back of his head. And this is very triumphant, and one of the few times I felt like that they used the Batman theme for this, or that she chose to use the Batman theme for this episode. But it really punctuates that Batman triumphant moment with that Shirley Walker Batman theme.
Yeah, I think it was definitely held back on the traditional Batman theme a bit in this episode. Yeah, the only other couple little musical notes I had was the very end when. It's sort of very sudden. It almost seems like it could be something out of Star Wars or some other kind of big blockbuster movie. It's sort of very sudden dramatic music when they sort of tumble over the cliff and you see Clayface begin to fall and everything. It's very dramatic, just and sudden, and just kind of one or two notes and then it stops, and then one or two more notes and then it stops. You kind of build the tension as they get closer to the edge and then finally fall over. I thought that was pretty brilliant. And then there's a right as Batman is sort of leaving the Batcave near the end, you see the door open up for him to drive out, and you see lightning strike, and you get a little bit of music there. I thought it was used pretty effectively there as well. So yeah, overall, I thought the music was quite tremendous in this episode. Probably the strongest part of the episode for me, and that's saying something, because obviously I liked visuals quite a bit as well. So for all that being said, I actually gave music in this episode a perfect 10 out of 10.
Excellent. Yeah, I'm right there with you. I also gave music a perfect 10 out of 10. A phenomenal score. It's one that's instantly memorable. I love the callbacks to that original theme. I love when there's a theme that recurs when you have a recurring villain. These are all things that really add to that continuity and that character building. And, you know, we love talking about the greatness of the late, great Shirley Walker and just what a phenomenal mind for music that she was, and how great, great she was, and what an unsung hero at times she was throughout this series. But this is another episode that perfectly showcases her talent, and well-deserved, I think, 10 out of 10 for both of us.
Absolutely.
All right, Liam, let's move to our final category of the day, which is going to be voice acting. And I think because we don't have a ton of characters this week to discuss, we don't have a giant cast to speak of either. But there are some big heavy hitters in this week that we can talk about. So I'll throw it over to you to talk about this week's voice cast.
Yeah, as far as a guest cast, really the only name is this Dr. Stella Bates. Pat Musick plays her, a real veteran voice actress. And honestly, it was hard. I did find one or two recognizable roles. She played the newscaster on The Tick, our cartoon, Sally Vacuum. But a lot of her credits are, you know, woman number two or additional voices by. And I don't say that obviously to belittle her acting chops, but it seems like she was just kind of a good like ensemble cast member and not necessarily always the star, but obviously has had a very long and successful career. Actually played Martha Wayne in an episode of Batman the Brave and the Bold at one point as well. So I think she does a good job, and it's interesting because again we sort of figure out her motivation early on, that she is in love with, she may not even be really in love with Matt Hagen so much as she's in love with the movie version of Matt Hagen.
Yeah.
So it would have been fun maybe to explore her, yeah, maybe it would have been more fun to explore her mental, uh, her side of things a little bit more in the episode. But I think she does a good job of playing a woman that very clearly cares for this monster, but is also probably a little bit unhinged herself.
Yeah, she clearly doesn't have it all together. She, you know, she's a little bit of a fangirl, I think. And again, I think her obsessing and seeing herself as this doctor in this movie, as we see in the scene where she's watching one of Matt Hagen's movies, she clearly sees herself as this doctor that loves Matt Hagen. So it's interesting that's sort of her motivation to end up being with Matt Hagen. So, you know, like you said, does she like Matt Hagen, or does she like the idea of this movie character that he played? It's kind of left a little bit ambiguous, but I think she does a fine job. I think her performance is a little bit, it felt like maybe she was going for that sort of 40s actress, sort of a little bit over the top type performance that if you watch any movies from that era, the way that the women talked and sort of the way that they delivered their lines was a little bit over the top. But I think for this character and for, you know, all of the nods to that old Hollywood era, I think that worked really well for this episode.
Yeah, I think she did a good job. And of course, yeah, not really many others in the way of guest characters. So we just have we obviously have Ephraim Zimbalist Jr. as My Alfred. And we have, before we get to Batman, we will talk about, of course, the main villain of the piece, the returning Ron Perlman as Clayface. And one thing I found, and I think it works because he's an actor, so he's a very dramatic man. But like almost every line out of his mouth in this episode is something of a cliche or a, you know, a classic, you know, a villain line or something or some sort of like acting pun. There's a lot of his dialogue, and obviously that's not on the fault of the actor. I think he does a tremendous job, especially in those more violent and sort of psychotic moments that he has in the episode. But it did strike me like, wow, there's a lot of like it's curtains for you, Batman, and that kind of thing going on. He's very over the top in this episode.
Yeah, that whole final scene, I think he drops three or four straight acting puns, which again, you're right, he didn't write them. And I actually think the way that he delivers them, they're subtle enough. It's not a wink and a nod. It's not Arnold Schwarzenegger and Batman and Robin delivering his ice puns. You know, it's not that over the top and obvious. So the way that he delivers them and the dramatic way that he's sort of screaming them as he tries to take Batman out is, I think it's effective enough. But the emotion that he has to convey in this is the frustrated and sort of, I guess he's sort of power hungry and he's still trying to maintain this, but he's powerless of this degenerative state that he's in. He is sort of using this woman or possibly using this woman to get as a means to get to the end that he's desiring. He's trying to beat the clock literally at times to, you know, maintain this stability in his form, so to speak. I think he does a great job, though. He's another one of those voices that, you know, is iconic for his many acting roles, obviously, you know, being in Sons of Anarchy and Hellboy and myriad of other Hollywood acting jobs. But his voice as Clayface could have at times, especially with this dialogue, veered into that corny. And I don't think it ever does in this case.
Yeah, no, I think, like I said, I do generally think it works because this character is a thespian, is an actor. And so he is very dramatic in his diet. And you add to that his condition has worsened and sort of his psychosis has deepened since we last saw him. I do think it generally works pretty well for the episode. And then, aside from Mr. Perlman and Miss Music, we have, of course, Kevin Conroy's Batman, who for most of the episode is kind of just there. He and Ephraim Zimbalist Jr.'s Alfred just kind of pondering what's going on exactly. They sort of are slowly piecing together this mystery. We see Batman doing a bit of detective work, trying to figure things out. And again, Alfred is sort of scouring Matt Hagen's career to find a connection to this woman. And then again, it all sort of comes to a head in that final fight. There's even as Matt Hagen has tried to suffocate him and kill him, Batman is still sort of reaching out and yelling to him to try to get him to hold it together, to hopefully save his life. But overall, I didn't think anyone was great in this episode, but I think it's another very strong episode vocally from our three or four main players here. So I ended up on a score of 8 out of 10 for my voice acting.
Nice. So I went, actually ended up going with a perfect 10 out of 10 for my acting. Wow. I actually really adored the interactions between Alfred and Batman in this episode, between Ephraim Zemblis Jr. and Kevin Conroy. I thought their interactions, there was a lot of the story that was carried between their sort of investigation together and Alfred doing his best to try and keep up with Bruce in the middle of the investigation, at times even being, you know, subtly snarky. And I love the line that he delivers as Batman is sitting at the computer and he's trying to break down, pun intended, he's trying to break down the fact that Clayface is having difficulty maintaining his composure. And Alfred responds with, "How grotesque. Would you like some tea?" Like, it's so, he's just so matter of fact. Like, he's heard all of this before. It's no skin off of his nose, you know. It's whatever. Okay, yeah, it's very gross. Would you like some tea, Master Bruce? Like,
am I correct in assuming the metamorphic Mr. Hagen is back in town, sir?
Back, but not for long, I guess. It seems that Clayface is losing his integrity.
I wasn't aware that he ever had any to begin with.
I'm speaking in a physiological sense, Alfred. Based on destructive ultrasonic analysis of the sample, the molecular bonding of his clay flesh is breaking down. He's falling apart, literally.
How grotesque. Tea?
Whatever medical process he's using to keep himself together must cost a fortune, which is why he's committing robberies. And that woman helping him, what's her stake in this?
Perhaps she enjoys mud baths.
It's a great transition, but there's some great back and forth between the two of them. And ironically, I felt like that they end up doing a large portion, despite the fact that the main focus is Clayface. The main focus is his relationship with Stella Bates. It's interesting that I felt like there is a significant portion that is carried by Kevin Conroy and Ephraim Zemblis Jr.'s interaction. And that starts right from the beginning. Alfred's classic line, "Your goose is cooked." And then as they do the investigation together and him pouring over entertainment magazines while Batman is out. Like, I just love that visual of Alfred looking through old people magazines from the 40s to figure out, you know, to find little tidbits and gossip rumors about Matt Hagen's life.
It's pretty incredible. And the line as Batman sort of figures out the mystery and, you know, jumps in the Batmobile to go away, and he's, "No time to explain," and Alfred just sort of goes, "Well, there never is there?" As Batman's pulling away, it's like, look, there's time. Like, clearly he had time, and he has a radio in the Batmobile. He could explain this to Alfred if he really wanted to. He's just not good at communicating. That's the issue here. But the back and forth between the two of them is definitely very good in this episode.
Yeah, I agree. All right, Liam. Well, that one leaves. Whoa. Well, wouldn't you know, haven't heard that sound in a while, and then we hear it last week, and then we hear it this week, and that means, of course, that there is a bonus point as we wrap
up. And it doesn't appear to be mine this week, so that must mean you've got one, Cal.
You are spot on, my friend. Good intuition there. I will mention that so this episode is interesting. Last week, your bonus point, if I recall, as we reviewed The Man Who Killed Batman, which of course, if you did not check out that classic episode, make sure give that a listen in the archives at dcaureview.com or on your favorite podcast app. But I would say you ended up giving a bonus point for the title card. And ironically, this week, my bonus point also is for the title card. And at some point, we will do a bonus episode where we'll talk, or maybe even a Discuss This League to talk about the best of the best of these iconic Batman the Animated Series title cards that just added so much character, and there's so much nostalgia around them that when you see them, you recognize, feelings come flooding back and you recognize it. But I love that this one plays directly off of that original Feet of Clay title card, which has the masks, the drama masks, the tragedy and comedy masks that you often see as a visual representation of acting or the art of acting. And this one, as we see, has the only the tragic mask, the tragedy mask. And it is not only the tragedy mask, it's cracked. So giving you that idea that this is a tragic story that we're about to witness, and that there's something that is not quite all put together there. And then, of course, the shadow from that tragedy mask reveals the silhouette of Clayface's head right there on the on the mask. Just a great visual, one that is just iconic to me when I think about the title cards from this series, so many of them. And again, I feel like we could probably give a bonus point for the title card most weeks that we review Batman the Animated Series, but really, really, really strong for this week. I love this one. I love the continuity of it. I love the link back and the throwback to that original Clayface episode, which is not something we get a whole lot between, especially between the title cards, where they're direct nods or direct homages to the original episodes when it's a follow-up. So I love that. I felt like it was worth the bonus point. So I figured, heck, why not? If you can give a title card a bonus point, I will too.
Love it, man. I did have a note about the title card that I'd forgotten to mention in our visuals section, so it's nice that we gave it its own special shout out here in the bonus point section, because yeah, it is very striking how not only does it play off the title card from Feet of Clay, but also sort of shows off, it sort of gives you a little taste of what the episode is going to be. As you said, the mask is deteriorating and you see the silhouette of Clayface behind it. And it's very, very striking and very memorable.
Absolutely. Agreed. All right, Liam. Well, that will bring us to our final scores for this week's episode. Totaling everything up, including with my bonus point, I ended up giving this episode a 37 out of 40, putting it in our top picks section. What about you?
Yeah, I'm a few points lower here. Not a giant disparity. No need for the disagreement alarm, but I ended up at a 33 out of 40. So still a very strong score. And I think this is, despite my personal score not making it, I do think this episode deserves to be in the conversation of those top picks. So very cool that it ended up there, even if you liked it a bit more than I did, at least score wise. But as we get into rewatchability, I would say this is definitely one that you should watch. Not only is, like we said, it's a more direct sequel to a classic two-part episode, but the events of this episode are then referenced in his next appearances, way down the line in the new Batman adventures. So I definitely give this one a thumbs up for rewatchability.
Yeah, I realized in post-production that we did not discuss rewatchability for the man who killed Batman. So we can actually retroactively do that in just a minute here. But yeah, I would also say that because of the importance of this episode and because of the nature in which it is followed up upon, and there's actually parts of this that, you know, that play into that follow-up, and that episode, as we mentioned, is one of your favorites and one of the most emotional, impactful episodes of that new Batman Adventures run. It's a good episode. Like I said, it's paced very well. It doesn't feel like a drag. There's some good action. There's some great visuals. There's tremendous music, and there's some really good voice acting as well. So all those reasons, I give it a thumbs up. It's put this one on. Watch it in order, though. Make sure that you don't watch this one out of order. If you haven't seen Feet of Clay, go back and watch that one, and then listen to a review of that one before you check this one out. So, by the way, I think we can both agree that Man Who Killed Batman also falls into that category of it's a must watch also.
Yeah, I would say so. It's a pretty iconic episode for the Joker scenes alone. So yeah, a retroactive thumbs up for that episode as well.
Didn't want you, what if I'm sure the listeners at home are like, what the heck, did these guys think we should watch this or not? So you guys were waiting with bated breath to hear our opinion on that. You are served, justice is served this week. So way to go. All right, Liam. Well, that will begin to wrap us up for this week's episode. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in. Don't forget, subscribe to us on your favorite podcast app if you have not done so already. Also, if you listen to us on Apple Podcasts, you can leave us a 5-star review, letting us know, describing what it is that you enjoy about the program. We would greatly appreciate that. Don't forget, you can also subscribe to us on other podcast apps, including Spotify and Google Podcasts, as well as iHeartRadio. We are an Anchor distributed podcast also, so you can get your podcast directly from Anchor if you wish. And you can also check out the entire archives at dcaureview.com, where you can check out our other top picks, our other best of the best episodes, and actually our worst episodes also are the ones that we put in the bad episode jar. If you're interested in hearing what some of those are, you can check out those as well. They are just as fun to hear us describe, in my opinion. If you wish to support the podcast, you can also check out our store. There is a tab at the top of the page. You can go check that out. Get yourself a shirt, a hat, a mug, sticker, lots of stuff over there for you to grab. And also, don't forget, we are a proud part of the Pod Tower on YouTube. That's right, our friends at the Watchtower database, as well as our friends at Tim Talk Podcast. You can grab all of their content alongside of us by subscribing to the Pod Tower YouTube page. If you decide to, even if you don't listen to your podcast on YouTube, do us a favor, go and subscribe to that channel. It takes 30 seconds, just, you know, search for the Pod Tower and subscribe to it. It supports us. It supports other DCAU content creators. And who knows, you know, one day your podcast app may be down, so you can head over to YouTube and check out the archives there, if you will. Speaking, Liam, of our podcast, as we roll on here through the month of April, that means we are continuing with yet another Batman the Animated Series episode next week. So let's give a quick little preview for what that episode is.
That is right. We've got another episode of Batman the Animated Series coming at you next week. And this one is another, this is an interesting one, and it's one that doesn't involve a big time, big name supervillain. And instead, it is a more character focused episode, and it is in fact entitled Paging the Crime Doctor.
Interested to check out this one because this is another one of those, again, as you said, it's character driven, not a big bad baddie in this one, so we'll be interested to see if this holds up and is one of those, because this is a story driven episode, if we like it, or if this is one of those that doesn't hold up and my childhood memories of groaning whenever this episode came on hold fast. But I look forward to reviewing that with you next week. But until then, I'm Cal.
And I'm Liam.
And we will talk to you on the next episode of the DCAU.
Bye-bye.